Today is Tuesday, April 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson remains in intensive care, a result of contracting the coronavirus.
Doctors are emphasizing that he has not been put on a ventilator.
Plus, Australia's Cardinal Pell has his sexual assault conviction quashed.
I think there's going to be complex and difficult reaction to this.
And what is the future of peace in Afghanistan? We'll have those stories and more next. Japan declared a coronavirus emergency in parts of the country. Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said his decision to enact a state of emergency in Tokyo and six other prefectures was based on a need to protect people amid a situation that is gravely affecting lives and the economy. The month-long measure allows for officials to call on people to stay home and comes coupled with a government stimulus package worth about $1 trillion. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson remained hospitalized with COVID-19. Johnson was hospitalized Sunday after symptoms persisted while he was in isolation. His office said on Monday that his condition deteriorated and that he was moved to an intensive care unit. Now, to get the latest on Johnson's health, I spoke with journalist Henry Ridgewell in London.
We haven't had any further updates of any detail from the hospital itself. As you say, Prime Minister Johnson was taken to intensive care at 7 o'clock local time yesterday in the evening. He was given immediate oxygen treatment. It hasn't been detailed exactly how that was administered. Doctors are emphasizing that he has not been put on a ventilator, basically a mechanical breathing machine. So his condition has not deteriorated that far yet. They are keeping him in intensive care because they want that equipment to be on hand should his condition deteriorate any further. When the news broke last night of Prime Minister Johnson going into hospital, it was in the evening as people were settling down to watch the television news. It really shocked the nation. You saw an outpouring of wishes, well wishes across the political spectrum and across the world, hoping that he would get better and would soon be out of hospital. For the moment, the Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab has taken over the lead of government, although he's not taking any major decisions as yet on the coronavirus crisis. But Prime Minister Johnson has asked him to take over while he tries to recover in hospital.
You say that he's asked Foreign Minister Raab to take over while he's in the hospital. Does that mean that he is, in fact, taking a step back? Because when he went into the hospital on Sunday, he was very much trying to lead the country through the pandemic.
Exactly right, Steve. So throughout this crisis and ever since Prime Minister Johnson was diagnosed with the coronavirus 11 days ago, he's tried to emphasize that he is still able to operate normally as the head of government. He's able to do normal government business. And when he went into hospital on Sunday evening, he had full video links with other members of his cabinet, most of whom, of course, are also stuck at home as well. And he was operating government normally. It does appear now that he has given up those reins of power. However, temporarily, he has asked Foreign Minister Raab to take over. And it appears that the doctors have probably played quite a big role in that decision as well. We all know that if you can take time out of your daily routine to try to recuperate, it generally helps the healing process. I think doctors have now emphasized to the Prime Minister that it's time he did exactly that, took some time off in the hope that his recovery will be faster and he can be back in 10 Downing Street soon.
That was reporter Henry Ridgewell speaking to me from London. The United States has experienced about 11,000 deaths, making it the country with the third highest official death tally behind only Italy and Spain. More than 40% of the U.S. deaths have been in the state of New York, and most of them in New York City. In South Korea, steady progress against the virus continues, with 47 new infections reported on Tuesday. But officials there also remain concerned about a reversal in the gains and urged people to stay home. Officials there are also considering using electronic wristbands to track those under self-quarantine because of the virus. A similar idea was authorized Monday in the U.S. state of West Virginia, where a judge in the county with the most cases ruled that local authorities could put ankle monitors on people who test positive but refuse to stay quarantined to protect others. Progress in some European nations has led to some of the first steps to reverse lockdown measures and begin to return to some semblance of normal life. Older people with underlying conditions are more vulnerable to the coronavirus, but another group of people is more vulnerable too. Patients who are undergoing treatment for autoimmune conditions such as lupus and rheumatoid arthritis. Dr. Talal Nsuli, professor of immunology at Georgetown University here in Washington, explained the problem to VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
They have a type of autoimmune disease. They have rheumatoid arthritis. They have lupus. They have other serious diseases, including ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, and they are receiving biologics for that. And we know that some of these biologics that are very effective for their autoimmune disease that works well for rheumatoid arthritis, work well for lupus, scleroderma, mixed connective tissue disease. Many of them, like Humira, we have also Remicade. So a lot of these are effective to treat their autoimmune disease. So what's an autoimmune disease? It's an increased response of the immune system that attacks our own joints, attacks our own heart. So these medications are pushing the brake on the immune system, calming down the immune system from overreacting. By doing so, they are already prohibiting the immune system to really protect ourselves appropriately. So we are more so prone for infection. And if we get an infection with the virus, such as the coronavirus, then we will see a major problem that can occur in these patients. And that's why we call them that they are also at high risk. And they have really to be very careful and to do whatever they can do in order to prevent from getting sick.
Would they be protected if they are already on the Plaquenil medicine that's being studied for curing COVID-19?
Everybody's talking about the anti-malaria medication that showed possible efficacy against the coronavirus. The answer is yes and no. I will go more for the yes than the no. I'm going to tell you why. There are numerous studies that were done showing the efficacy of the Plaquenil, the brand name, the chemical name is hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine, against the coronavirus 19. A study that was published in China about 1.5 months ago, they took 100 patients that were suffering with the coronavirus and they gave them chloroquine. 70% of these patients improved tremendously. The viral load decreased. They felt much better, and they were able to improve compared the control group. They added to this medication azithromycin, which is the Z-Pak, and when they added the azithromycin, they had an amplification of the improvement that was seen with hydroxychloroquine, probably was 30 to 40% quicker improvement and more beneficial effect than using only the hydroxychloroquine. So the authors concluded the combination of hydroxychloroquine, Plaquenil, and the azithromycin, Z-Pak, could be considered in the treatment of patients with the coronavirus 19. However, these two medications should be used very cautiously in patients that do have heart problems because they can cause severe heart arrhythmias. It means can affect the functioning of the heart and can even kill someone if the person has heart problem. So therefore, these people have to be very careful if they're going to be receiving these medications. And they should be administered if someone is seriously sick with the coronavirus.
That was Professor of Immunology at Georgetown University, Dr. Talal Nsuli. He was speaking to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. And still to come later in the program,
it will be very tough and difficult to further the Afghan peace process with the Taliban and end this conflict.
You're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute. Researchers at the University of Pittsburgh's School of Medicine reported a potential vaccine against the SARS coronavirus 2, which causes COVID-19. Their findings, published in the Lancet's journal eBiomedicine, is being touted as the first peer-reviewed research on a vaccine for COVID-19. The researchers tested this vaccine with mice. According to the study, the vaccine, which is delivered through a fingertip-sized patch containing an array of microneedles, produces antibodies that are specific to the SARS coronavirus 2. Study authors think the quantity of antibodies produced by their vaccine is sufficient enough for neutralizing the virus. The authors are applying for an investigational new drug approval from the FDA in hopes of starting the first phase of human clinical trials in the next few months. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Australia's highest court has quashed the child abuse convictions of the Catholic Church's Cardinal George Pell. He was the former financial advisor to the Pope. Cardinal Pell was serving a six-year jail term. He was found guilty in December of 2018 of sexually abusing two choir boys in 1996 when he was the Catholic Archbishop of Melbourne. Phil Mercer reports Cardinal Pell has always said he was innocent.
Cardinal George Pell was the most senior Catholic figure in the world to be jailed for child abuse. He'll now be freed after a year in prison. Australia's High Court has said there was reasonable doubt that the alleged offences could have taken place in a busy cathedral almost 25 years ago. A jury found in 2018 that Cardinal Pell had committed what the trial judge said was a brazen and forcible sexual attack on two choir boys. But his lawyers had argued the case against him was flawed because it relied on the uncorroborated evidence of the surviving boy. In a unanimous decision, the High Court concluded that there was a significant possibility that an innocent person was found guilty. Noel de Bien, a religious affairs specialist at the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, says the decision will be celebrated by Pell's supporters, but will disappoint other victims of abuse.
Individuals who had been offended against felt that the bringing down of George Pell had somehow justified all their pain, had helped them get past it. So I think there's going to be complex and difficult reaction to this. Relief, of course, from those who have believed in George Pell's innocence.
Cardinal Pell will soon be free from Barwon Prison in the Australian state of Victoria. His acquittal brings an end to a five-year legal saga that took allegations of abuse to the heart of the Vatican. The High Court ruling was handed down to an almost empty court registry in Brisbane due to physical distancing measures introduced in response to the coronavirus pandemic. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Billions of Christians around the world are celebrating Holy Week, the 7 days from Palm Sunday to Easter, which is next Sunday. Along with residents of one-third of the world under lockdown to try and stop the spread of the coronavirus, Christians in the Holy Land are preparing for a very different kind of holiday. Linda Gradstein has that story.
Just 1 year ago in Jerusalem, Palm Sunday was celebrated by a procession of thousands waving palm branches.
This year, first and foremost, there's a feeling of sadness that this had to be cancelled. And we are saying to one another, next year we're going to have to celebrate double.
This year, instead of the grand procession, single olive branches were distributed to Christians confined to their homes in Jerusalem's Old City. Easter prayers at the locked Church of the Holy Sepulchre will be held with very few clergy in attendance.
We have there three different communities. We have the Roman Catholic, the Greek Orthodox, and the Armenians. So we cannot cancel any of these communities. So simultaneously, the idea is to find a way to allow the prayers to be held in very minimalistic way by keeping all hygiene restrictions, you know. The prayers from there are planned to be broadcasted live as through various means, mainly social media, but also some TVs.
Father Neuhaus tries to find a positive message in today's situation.
The silence that has fallen over Jerusalem in these last days and weeks, the silence that will follow us through Holy Week, also has a positive side because it gives a real feeling of retreat, a real feeling of prayer, meditation. We can really take seriously, without all of the external trappings, the meaning of these days. And perhaps that is a gift of this season.
Collaborating with one another and standing together as one human people, he added, is the only way to overcome the virus. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
The Taliban on Tuesday broke off talks with the Afghan government on a prisoner exchange. That was a main step in the peace talks being brokered by the United States after it agreed to a troop withdrawal pact with the militants. Earlier, I spoke with Ayaz Gul in Islamabad via WhatsApp to learn more.
As we know that the agreement between the U.S. And the Taliban required that the Taliban would release around 1,000 prisoners of the Afghan government. And in exchange, if like around 5,000 Taliban prisoners would be released from Afghan jails. And once that process had completed, the real intra-Afghan peace negotiations would have started. But we are still stuck, like all the warring sides in Afghanistan are still stuck on the very first step of this much-awaited peace process, and that is the release of these prisoners. And we know that a Taliban, three-member Taliban team arrived in Kabul a week ago with the hope and, under pressure on both the Taliban and the Afghan government from the United States to go ahead and complete the prisoner swap. But after 1 week, both sides, after holding several rounds of negotiations in Kabul, have accused each other of using delaying tactics or making demands that are not realistic, according to the Afghan government. And we saw yesterday on Monday, the leader of the Afghan government negotiating team came out with a press conference where he asserted that the Taliban are demanding the release, immediate release of 15 senior commanders before any other prisoners are released. And the Afghan government maintains, or the head of the negotiating team said, that these Taliban commanders were involved in major attacks and that killed dozens of Afghan security forces and Afghan civilians. And releasing them is not possible for the government because the government believes, according to the negotiating team leader, that these people must be brought to justice.
You mentioned what many believe is the thing that ended the current round of talks trying to move things forward. There have been some discussions as to the amount of prisoners that Afghanistan would release in exchange for those being released by the Taliban. Is it just the top level individuals that the Afghan government said was a no-go, or were there further discussions on the number of prisoners that contributed to this as well?
The latest hurdle that we have seen that has come up is about these 15 senior Taliban commanders. But overall, the Taliban has not been happy from their statements on this conditional release of around 5,000 prisoners that the Taliban say they shared a list with the Americans, and then the same list was shared with the Afghan government, that all these 5,000 prisoners would have to be released before any further steps are taken in this Afghan peace process, like starting the intra-Afghan negotiations. So it's we know that the President Ashraf Ghani has issued a timetable for releasing all these 5,000 prisoners in a manner that not only the intra-Afghan negotiations with the Taliban begin, but there has to be progress before all 5,000 prisoners are to be released. Now, let me just tell you that the Taliban has not said anything about what has led to their decision to break off the discussions. All they have said is that the Afghan government is dragging its feet on the issue, and that is not, has not released or it does not want to release any prisoners, and that is why they don't want to engage in further discussions.
So how is the pullout from the Taliban affecting the political structure in Afghanistan, since you do have President Ashraf Ghani and his chief rival, Abdullah Abdullah, both who have, you know, said that they are, in fact, the legitimate president of Afghanistan?
Yes, that's a good question. And that is actually the major obstacle now in the way of ending this deadly conflict in Afghanistan, that while the Taliban has agreed to negotiate peace with Afghan stakeholders, there is now this internal conflict among Afghan politicians and political leaders that is now posing a serious threat to this nascent peace process. This rivalry between President Ashraf Ghani and Abdullah Abdullah is now a major challenge than whatever is happening as part of the U.S.-Taliban agreement, whether it's the prisoner's release or whether it's intra-Afghan negotiations. I think with no solution to this political crisis in Kabul, it will be very tough and difficult to further the Afghan peace process with the Taliban and end this conflict.
That was reporter Ayaz Ghul in Islamabad. The U.S. Africa Command said it has carried out an airstrike in Somalia Monday. U.S. AFRICOM, in coordination with the federal government of Somalia, targeted al-Shabaab terrorists in the vicinity of Jilib. The command's initial assessment concluded that the airstrike killed five terrorists and that no civilians were injured or killed. Now, there have been reports that alleged civilian casualties in drone strikes, and U.S. AFRICOM is reviewing that information. As the coronavirus quickly spreads across the U.S., frontline healthcare workers are facing critical shortages of surgical masks and respirators. Now, to help tackle the problem, more Americans are buying a huge number of masks from overseas. VOA's Eunjung Cho has their story.
Tricia Ray Pendergrast is a first-year medical student in Chicago. Since mid-March, Pendergrast and fellow medical students have been delivering personal protective equipment, or PPE, to the front lines of the coronavirus epidemic.
UIC help definitely appreciates you guys. Thank you.
Through online crowdsourcing platforms and community donations, the students secured funding for 30,000 respirator masks.
I mean, that means a lot. Being able to play a role in keeping, you know, people safe is a privilege, and that's kind of a privilege that defines being a physician.
Some doctors jump into the medical equipment supply chain themselves to secure protective gear for their colleagues in emergency rooms.
I was literally watching our ER physicians going from one room to the next to intubate patients in the emergency room, put as much PPE on as you can, go in and intubate, come out and take it off, and then try to turn around and do it all over again.
On GoFundMe, there are hundreds of campaigns to provide highly protective masks to the hospitals across America. The majority of those masks come from China. Kara Dyer runs a toy company. She was able to get 20,000 masks from China thanks to her business connections.
I contacted my manufacturer that I've worked with for 10 years in China, and she started helping me source masks. There's a lot of competition among buyers, and so you have to have cash in order to buy masks.
But some fail to buy masks even when they have cash.
Factory got shut down, surrounded by police, and the government shut it down before they were able to send our supply.
Her contact told Stone that the Chinese government is not allowing the factory to fulfill exports. Her contact is again offering to get supplies from the same factory if she can order more at a higher price.
I just feel like I need to do what I promised that I was going to do, or I need to give the money back. And I really don't want to have to give it back. I'd rather succeed and be able to help the healthcare workers in Austin.
Eunjung Cho, VOA News, Washington.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, I'd like to thank you very much for spending part of your day with us. Now, be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.